Jin is in a position to take sole possession of not only the first technology of genuinely extraterrestrial origin, but also a prefabricated mechanism for the manipulation of living systems, and the first clues as to the nature of the larger, I will call it galactic, biosphere. Directed by human hands, the applications of this are limitless. I believe that the opportunity now facing not only us, but life itself, is as profound and transformative as anything that has ever happened. And, further, the control of this technology will represent the base of all political and economic power from now on. I urge you to consider the technical details I have outlined in the attached. Moving quickly to understand the programming, mechanism, and intent of the protomolecule, as well as its direct application to human beings, will mark the difference between a protogen-led future and being left behind. I urge immediate and decisive action to take exclusive control of the protomolecule and move forward with large-scale testing. Thank you for your time and attention. The sociopath smiled again, and the corporate logo reappeared. First, fastest, furthest. Miller's heart was racing. Okay. All right, he said, and then, fuck me. Protogen, protomolecule, Holden said. They had no idea what it does, but they slapped their label on it like they'd made it. They found an alien weapon, and all they could think to do was brand it. There's reason to think these boys are pretty impressed with themselves, Miller replied with a nod. Now, I'm not a scientist or anything, Holden said, but it seems to me like taking an alien supervirus and dropping it into a space station would be a bad idea. It's been 2 years, Miller said. They've been doing tests. They've been... I don't know what the hell they've been doing. But Eros is what they decided on. And everyone knows what happened on Eros. The other side did it. No research and recovery ships because they're all fighting each other or guarding something. The war? It's a distraction. And Protogen is doing what? Seeing what their toy does when you take it out for a spin is my guess, Miller said. They were silent for a long moment. Holden spoke first. So, you take a company that seems to be lacking in institutional conscience, that has enough government research contracts to almost be a privately run branch of the military, how far will they go for the Holy Grail? First, fastest, furthest, Miller replied. Yeah. Guys, Naomi said, you should come down here. I think I've got something. Chapter 35. Holden. I found the comm logs, Naomi said as Holden and Miller drifted into the room behind her. Holden put a hand on her shoulder, pulled it back, and hated that he'd pulled back. A week earlier, she'd have been fine with a simple gesture of affection like that, and he wouldn't have been afraid of her reaction. He regretted the new distance between them only slightly less than he would have regretted not saying anything at all. He wanted to tell her that. Instead, he said, "Find anything good?" She tapped the screen and pulled up the log. "They were hardcore about calm discipline," she said, pointing at the long list of dates and times. "Nothing ever went out on radio, everything was tight beam, and everything was doublespeak, lots of obvious code phrases." Miller's mouth moved inside his helmet. Holden tapped on his face shield. Miller rolled his eyes in disgust and then chinned the comm link to the general channel. "Sorry, don't spend a lot of time in suits," he said. "What have we got that's good?" "Not much, but the last communication was in plain English," she said, then tapped the last line on the list. "Thoth Station. Crew degenerating. Projecting 100% casualties. Materials secured. Stabilizing course and speed. Vector data to follow. Extreme contamination hazard for entry teams. Captain Higgins." Holden read it several times, imagining Captain Higgins watching the infection spread through his crew, helpless to stop it. His people vomiting all over in a vacuum-sealed metal box, even one molecule of the substance on your skin a virtual death sentence. Black filament-covered tendrils erupting from their eyes and mouths. And then that soup that covered the reactor. He let himself shudder, grateful that Miller wouldn't see it through the atmosphere suit. So, this Higgins fella realizes his crew is turning into vomit zombies and sends a last message to his bosses, right? Miller said, breaking into Holden's reverie. What's this stuff about vector data? He knew they'd all be dead, so he was letting his people know how to catch the ship, Holden replied. But they didn't because it's here. Because Julie took control and flew it somewhere else, Miller said. Which means they're looking for it, right? Holden ignored that and put his hand back on Naomi's shoulder, with what he hoped was companionable casualness. We have tight beam messages and the vector info, he said. Are they all going to the same place? Sort of, she said, nodding with her right hand. Not the same place, but all to what appear to be points in the belt. But based on the changes in direction and the times they were sent, to one point in the belt that is moving around, and not in a stable orbit either. A ship, then? Naomi gave another nod. Probably, she said. I've been playing with the locations, and I can't find anything in the registry that looks likely. No stations or inhabited rocks. A ship would make sense, but... Holden waited for Naomi to finish, but Miller leaned forward impatiently. But what? He said. But how did they know where it would be? She replied. I have no incoming comms in the log. If a ship was moving around randomly in the belt, how'd they know where to send these messages? Holden squeezed her shoulder, lightly enough that she probably didn't even feel it in the heavy environment suit, then pushed off and allowed himself to drift toward the ceiling. So it's not random, he said. They had some sort of map of where this thing would be at the time they sent the laser comms. Could be one of their stealth ships. Naomi turned around in her chair to look up at him. Could be a station, she said. It's the lab, Miller broke in. They're running an experiment on Eros. They need the white coats nearby. Naomi, Holden said, material secured. There's a safe in the captain's quarters that's still locked down. Think you can get it open? Naomi gave a one-handed shrug. I don't know, she said. Maybe. Amos could probably blast it open with some of the explosives we found in that big box of weapons. Holden laughed. Well, he said, since it's probably full of little vials of nasty alien viruses, I'm going to nix the blasting option. Naomi shut down the comm log and pulled up a general ship systems menu. I can look around and see if the computer has access to the safe, she said. Try to open it that way. It might take some time. Do what you can, Holden said. We'll get out of your hair. Holden pushed himself off the ceiling and over to the ops compartment hatch, then pulled himself through into the corridor beyond. A few moments later, Miller followed. The detective planted his feet on the deck with magnetic boots, then stared at Holden, waiting. Holden floated down to the deck next to him. What do you think? Holden asked. Protogen being the whole thing. Or is this another one where it looks like them, so it isn't? Miller was silent for the space of two long breaths. This one smells like the real thing, Miller said. He sounded almost grudging. Amos pulled himself up the crew ladder from below, dragging a large metal case behind him. Hey, Captain, he said. I found a whole case of fuel pellets for the reactor in the machine shop. We'll probably want to take these with us. Good work, Holden said, holding up one hand to let Miller know to wait. Go ahead and take those across. Also, I need you to work up a plan for scuttling this ship. Wait, what? Amos said. This thing is worth a jillion bucks, Captain. Stealth missile ship? The OPA would sell their grandmothers for this thing. And six of those tubes still have fish in them. Capital ship busters. You could slag a small moon with those. Forget their grannies, the OPA would pimp their daughters for that gear. Why the fuck would we blow it up? Holden stared at him in disbelief. Did you forget what's in the engine room? He asked. Hell, Cap, Amos snorted. That shit is all frozen. A couple hours with a torch, I can chop it up and chuck it out the airlock. Good to go. The mental image of Amos hacking the melted bodies of the ship's former crew apart with a plasma torch and then cheerfully hurling the chunks out an airlock tipped Holden over the edge into full-fledged nausea. The big mechanic's ability just to ignore anything that he didn't want to notice probably came in handy while he was crawling around in tight and greasy engine compartments. His ability to shrug off the horrible mutilation of several dozen people threatened to change Holden's disgust into anger. Forgetting the mess, he said, and the very real possibility of infection by what made that mess, there is also the fact that someone is desperately searching for this very expensive and very stealthy ship, and so far Alex can't find the ship that's looking. He stopped talking and nodded at Amos while the mechanic mulled that over. He could see Amos's broad face working as he put it together in his head. Found a stealth ship. Other people looking for stealth ship. We can't see the other people looking for it. Shit. Amos's face went pale. Right, he said. I'll set the reactor up to slagger. He looked down at the time on his suit's forearm display. Shit, we've been here too long. Better get the lead out. Better had, Miller agreed. Naomi was good. Very good. Holden had discovered this when he'd signed on with the Canterbury, and over the course of years he'd added it to his list of facts, along with space is cold and the direction of gravity is down. When something stopped working on the water hauler, he'd tell Naomi to fix it, and then never think of it again. Sometimes she'd claim not to be able to fix something, but it was always a negotiating tactic. A short conversation would lead to a request for spare parts or an additional crewman hired on at the next port, and that would be that. There was no problem that involved electronics or spaceship parts she couldn't solve. I can't open the safe, she said. She floated next to the safe in the captain's quarters, one foot resting lightly on his bunk to stabilize herself as she gestured. Holden stood on the floor with his boot mags on. Miller was in the hatchway to the corridor. What do you need? Holden asked. If you won't let me blast it or cut it, I can't open it. Holden shook his head, but Naomi either didn't see it or ignored him. The safe is designed to open when a very specific pattern of magnetic fields is played across that metal plate on the front, she said. Someone has a key designed to do that, but that key isn't on this ship. It's at that station, Miller said. He wouldn't send it there if they couldn't open it. Holden stared at the wall safe for a moment, his fingers tapping on the bulkhead beside it. What are the chances cutting it sets off a booby trap? He said. Fucking excellent, Cap, Amos said. He was listening in from the torpedo bay as he hacked the small fusion reactor that powered one of the six remaining torpedoes to go critical. Working on the ship's main reactor was too dangerous with the shielding stripped off. Naomi, I really want that safe and the research notes and samples it contains, Holden said. You don't know that's what's in there, Miller said, then laughed. No, of course that's what's in there. But it won't help us if we get blown up or worse. If some piece of goo-coated shrapnel makes a hole in our nice suits. I'm taking it, Holden replied, then pulled a piece of chalk from his suit's pocket and drew a line around the safe on the bulkhead. Naomi, cut a small hole in the bulkhead and see if there's anything that would stop us from just cutting the whole damn thing out and taking it with us. We'd have to take out half the wall. Okay. Naomi frowned, then shrugged, then smiled and nodded with one hand. All right, then, she said. Thinking of taking it to Fred's people? Miller laughed again, a dry, humorless rasp that made Holden uneasy. The detective had been watching the video of Julie Mao's fight with her captors over and over again while they'd waited on Naomi and Amos to finish their work. It gave Holden the disquieting feeling that Miller was storing the footage in his head. Fuel for something he planned to do later.
"Mars would give you your lives back in exchange for this," Miller said. "I hear Mars is nice, if you're rich."
"Fuck rich," Amos said with a grunt as he worked on something below. "They'd build statues of us."
"We have an agreement with Fred to let him outbid any other contracts we take," Holden said. "Of course, this isn't really a contract per se." Naomi smiled and winked at Holden.
"So what is it, sir?" she said, her voice faintly mocking. "OPA heroes? Martian billionaires? Start your own biotech firm? What are we doing here?"
Holden pushed away from the safe and kicked out toward the airlock and the cutting torch that waited there with their other tools.
"I don't know yet," he said, "but it sure feels nice to have choices again."
Amos pushed the button again. No new stars flared in the dark. The radiation and infrared sensors remained quiet.
"There's supposed to be an explosion, right?" Holden asked.
"Fuck yes," Amos said, then pushed the button on the black box in his hand a third time. "This isn't an exact science or anything. Those missile drives are as simple as it gets. Just a reactor with one wall missing. Can't exactly predict."
"It isn't rocket science," Holden said with a laugh.
"What?"
Amos asked, ready to be angry if he was being mocked.
"You know, it isn't rocket science," Holden said. "Like, it isn't hard. You're a rocket scientist, Amos. For real. You work on fusion reactors and starship drives for a living. A couple hundred years ago, people would have been lining up to give you their children for what you know."
"What the fuck?"
Amos started, but stopped when a new sun flared outside the cockpit window, then faded quickly.
"See? Fucking told you it would work."
"Never doubted it," Holden said, then slapped Amos on one meaty shoulder and headed aft down the crew ladder.
"What the fuck was that about?"
Amos asked no one in particular as Holden drifted away. He headed through the ops deck. Naomi's chair was empty. He'd ordered her to get some sleep. Strapped down to loops inset in the deck was the stealth ship safe. It looked bigger cut out of the wall, black and imposingly solid, the kind of container in which one kept the end of the solar system. Holden floated over to it and quietly said, "Open sesame." The safe ignored him, but the deck hatch opened and Miller pulled himself up into the compartment. His environment suit had been traded in for a stale-smelling blue jumpsuit and his ever-present hat. There was something about the look on his face that made Holden uncomfortable, even more so than the detective usually made him.
"Hey," Holden said.
Miller just nodded and pulled himself over to one of the workstations, then buckled in to one of the chairs.
"We decided on a destination yet?" he asked.
"No, I'm having Alex run the numbers on a couple of possibilities, but I haven't made up my mind."
"Been watching the news at all?"
the detective asked. Holden shook his head, then moved over to a chair on the other side of the compartment. Something in Miller's face was chilling his blood.
"No," he said. "What happened?"
"You don't hedge, Holden. I admire that about you, I guess."
"Just tell me," Holden said.
"No, I mean it. A lot of people claim to believe in things. Family is most important, but they'll screw a $50 hooker on payday. Country first, but they cheat on their taxes. Not you, though. You say everyone should know everything, and by God, you put your money where your mouth is."
Miller waited for him to say something, but Holden didn't know what. This speech had the feel of something the detective had prepared ahead of time. Might as well let him finish it.
"So Mars finds out that maybe Earth's been building ships on the side, ones with no flag on them. Some of them might have killed a Martian flagship.
I bet Mars calls up to check. I mean, it's the Earth-Mars Coalition Navy, one big, happy hegemony. Been policing the solar system together for almost 100 years. Commanding officers are practically sleeping together. So it must be a mistake, right?
Okay, Holden said, waiting.
So Mars calls, Miller said. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I bet that's how it starts. A call from some bigwig on Mars to some bigwig on Earth.
Seems reasonable, Holden said.
What do you think Earth says back?
I don't know.
Miller reached over and flipped on one of the screens, then pulled up a file with his name on it, date stamped from less than an hour before. A recording of video from a Martian news source, showing the night sky through a Martian dome. Streaks and flashes fill the sky. The ticker across the bottom of the feed says that Earth ships in orbit around Mars suddenly and without warning fired on their Martian counterparts. The streaks in the sky are missiles. The flashes are ships dying. And then a massive white flare turns the Martian night into day for a few seconds, and the crawl says that the Dimas deep radar station has been destroyed. Holden sat and watched the video display the end of the solar system in vivid color and with expert commentary. He kept waiting for the streaks of light to begin descending on the planet itself, for the domes to fly apart in nuclear fire. But it seemed someone had kept some measure of restraint, and the battle remained in the sky. It couldn't stay that way forever.
You're telling me that I did this? Holden said. That if I hadn't broadcast that data, those ships would still be alive? Those people?
That. Yeah. And that if the bad guys wanted to keep people from watching Eros, it just worked.
Chapter 36. Miller. The war stories flowed in. Miller watched the feeds 5 at a time, subscreens crowding the face of his terminal. Mars was shocked, amazed, reeling. The war between Mars and the Belt, the biggest, most dangerous conflict in the history of mankind, was suddenly a sideshow. The reactions of the talking heads of Earth security forces ran the gamut from calm, rational discussion of preemptive defense to foaming-at-the-mouth denunciations of Mars as a pack of baby-raping animals. The attack on Dimas had turned the moon into a slowly spreading ring of gravel in the moon's old orbit, a smudge on the Martian sky. And with that, the game had changed again. Miller watched for 10 hours as the attack became the blockade. The Martian Navy spread throughout the system was turning home under heavy burn. The OPA feeds were calling it a victory, and maybe someone thought that was true. The pictures came through from the ships from the sensor arrays. Dead warships, their sides ripped open by high-energy explosions, spinning out into their irregular orbital graves. Medical bays like the Rossi's filled with boys and girls half his age, bleeding, burning, dying. Each cycle, new footage came in. New details of death and carnage. And each time some new clip appeared, he sat forward, hand on his mouth, waiting for the word to come. The one event that would signal the end of it all. But it hadn't come yet, and every hour that didn't bring it gave another sliver of hope that maybe, maybe, it wasn't going to happen.
Hey, Amos said. You slept at all?
Miller looked up, his neck stiff. Red creases of his pillow still on his cheek and forehead, the mechanic stood in the open doorway of Miller's cabin.
What? Miller said. Then, yeah, no, I've been watching. Anyone drop a rock?
Not yet. It's all still orbital or higher.
What kind of half-assed apocalypse are they running down there?
Amos said.
Give them a break. It's their first.
The mechanic shook his broad head, but Miller could see the relief under the feigned disgust. As long as the domes were still standing on Mars, as long as the critical biosphere of Earth wasn't in direct threat, humanity wasn't dead. Miller had to wonder what they were hoping for out in the belt, whether they'd managed to talk themselves into believing that the rough ecological pockets of the asteroids would sustain life indefinitely.
You want a beer? Amos asked. You're having beer for breakfast?
Figure it's dinner for you, Amos said. The man was right. Miller needed sleep. He hadn't managed more than a catnap since they'd scuttled the stealth ship, and that had been plagued by strange dreams. He yawned at the thought of yawning, but the tension in his gut said he was more likely to spend the day watching news feeds than resting.
It's probably breakfast again, Miller said. Want some beer for breakfast? Amos asked.
Sure. Walking through the Rocinante felt surreal. The quiet hum of the air recyclers, the softness of the air. The journey out to Julie's ship was a haze of pain medication and sickness. The time on Eros before that was a nightmare that wouldn't fade. To walk through the spare, functional corridors, thrust gravity holding him gently to the floor, with very little chance of anyone trying to kill him, felt suspicious. When he imagined Julie walking with him, it wasn't so bad. As he ate, his terminal chimed, the automatic reminder for another blood flush. He stood, adjusted his hat, and headed off to let the needles and pressure injectors do their worst. The captain was already there and hooked into a station when Miller arrived. Holden looked like he'd slept, but not well. There weren't the bruised dark marks under his eyes that Miller had, but his shoulders were tense, his brow on the edge of furrowed. Miller wondered whether he'd been a little too hard on the guy. I told you so could be an important message, but the burden of innocent death, of the chaos of a failing civilization, might also be too much for one man to carry. Or maybe he was still mooning over Naomi. Holden raised the hand that wasn't encased in medical equipment.
Morning, Miller said.
Hey.
Decided where we're going yet?
Not yet.
Getting harder and harder to get to Mars, Miller said, easing himself into the familiar embrace of the medical station. If that's what you're aiming for, you'd better do it soon.
While there's still a Mars, you mean?
For instance,
Miller agreed. The needles snaked out on gently articulated armatures. Miller looked at the ceiling, trying not to tense up as the lines forced their way into his veins. There was a moment's stinging, then a low, dull ache, and then numbness. The display above him announced the state of his body to doctors who were watching young soldiers die miles above Olympus Mons.
Do you think they'd stop? Holden asked. I mean, Earth has got to be doing this because Protogen owns some generals or senators or something, right? It's all because they want to be the only ones who have this thing. If Mars has it too, Protogen doesn't have a reason to fight.
Miller blinked. Before he could pick his answer, they'd try to annihilate Mars completely, or it's gone too far for that, or exactly how naive are you, Captain? Holden went on.
Screw it. We've got the data files. I'm going to broadcast them.
Miller's reply was as easy as reflex.
No, you aren't.
Holden propped himself up, storm clouds in his expression. I appreciate that you might have a reasonable difference of opinion, he said, but this is still my ship. You're a passenger.
True, Miller said, but you have a hard time shooting people, and you're going to have to shoot me before you send that thing out.
I'm what? The new blood flowed into Miller's system like a tickle of ice water crawling toward his heart. The medical monitor shifted to a new pattern, counting up the anomalous cells as they hit its filters.
You are going to have to shoot me, Miller said, slowly this time. Twice now you've had the choice of whether or not to break the solar system, and both times you've screwed it up. I don't want to see you strike out. I think you may have an exaggerated idea of how much influence the second-in-command of a long-distance water hauler actually has. Yes, there's a war, and yes, I was there when it started up. But the Belt has hated the inner planets since a long time before the Cant was attacked. You've got the inner planets divided up, too, Miller said. Holden tilted his head. Earth has always hated Mars, Holden said, like he was reporting that water was wet. When I was in the Navy, we ran projections for this. Battle plans, if Earth and Mars ever really got into it. Earth loses. Unless they hit first, hit hard, and don't let up. Earth just plain loses. Maybe it was distance. Maybe it was a failure of imagination. Miller had never seen the inner planets as divided. Seriously? He asked. They're the colony, but they have all the best toys, and everyone knows it. Holden said. Everything that's happening out there right now has been building up for 100 years. If it hadn't been there to start with, this couldn't have happened. That's your defense? Not my powder keg? I just brought the match? I'm not making a defense, Holden said. His blood pressure and heart rate were spiking. We've been through this, Miller said. So let me just ask. Why is it you think this time will be different? The needles in Miller's arm seemed to heat up almost to the point of being painful. He wondered if that was normal, if every blood flush he had was going to feel the same way. This time is different, Holden said. All the crap that's going on out there is what happens when you have imperfect information. Mars and the Belt wouldn't have been going after each other in the first place if they'd known what we know now. Earth and Mars wouldn't be shooting each other if everyone knew the fight was being engineered. The problem isn't that people know too much. It's that they don't know enough. Something hissed, and Miller felt a wave of chemical relaxation swim through him. He resented it, but there was no calling the drugs back. You can't just throw information at people, Miller said. You have to know what it means, what it's going to do. There was a case back on Ceres. Little girl got killed. For the first 18 hours, we were all sure Daddy did it. He was a felon, a drunk. He was the last one who saw her breathing. All the classic signs. Hour 19, we get a tip. Turned out Daddy owed a lot of money to one of the local syndicates. All of a sudden, things are more complicated. We have more suspects. Do you think if I'd been broadcasting everything I knew, Daddy would still have been alive when the tip came? Or would someone have put it all together and done the obvious thing? Miller's medical station chimed. Another new cancer. He ignored it. Holden's cycle was just finishing. The redness of his cheek speaking as much to the fresh, healthy blood in his body as to his emotional state. That's the same ethos they have, Holden said. Who? Protogen. You may be on different sides, but you're playing the same game. If everyone said what they knew, none of this would have happened. If the first lab tech on Phoebe who saw something weird had gotten on his system and said, "Hey everyone, look, this is weird," none of this would have happened. Yeah, Miller said. Because telling everyone there's an alien virus that wants to kill them all is a great way to maintain calm and order. Miller, Holden said, I don't mean to panic you, but there's an alien virus, and it wants to kill everyone. Miller shook his head and smiled like Holden had said something funny. So look, maybe I can't point a gun at you and make you do the right thing. But let me ask you something, okay? Fine, Holden said. Miller leaned back. The drugs were making his eyelids heavy. What happens? Miller said. There was a long pause. Another chime from the medical system. Another rush of cold through Miller's abused veins. What happens? Holden repeated.
It occurred to Miller he could have been more specific. He forced his eyes open again.
You broadcast everything we've got. What happens?
The war stops. People go after Protogen.
There's some holes in that, but let it go. What happens after that?
Holden was quiet for a few heartbeats.
People start going after the Phoebe bug, he said. They start experimenting. They start fighting for it. If that little bastard's as valuable as Protogen thinks, you can't stop the war. All you can do now is change it.
Holden frowned, angry lines at the corners of his mouth and eyes. Miller watched a little piece of the man's idealism die, and was sorry that it gave him joy.
So what happens if we get to Mars?
Miller went on, his voice low.
We trade out the protomolecule for more money than any of us have ever seen. Or maybe they just shoot you.
Mars just wins against Earth. And the Belt.
Or you go to the OPA, who are the best hope the Belt has of independence, and they're a bunch of crazy zealots. Half of them thinking they can actually sustain out there without Earth. And trust me, they'll probably shoot you too. Or you just tell everyone everything and pretend that however it comes down, you kept your hands clean.
There's a right thing to do, Holden said.
You don't have a right thing, friend, Miller said. You've got a whole plate full of maybe a little less wrong.
Holden's blood flush finished. The captain pulled the needles out of his arm and let the thin metallic tentacles retract. As he rolled down his sleeve, the frown softened.
People have a right to know what's going on, Holden said.
Your argument boils down to you not thinking people are smart enough to figure out the right way to use it.
Has anyone used anything you've broadcast as something besides an excuse to shoot someone they already didn't like?
Giving them a new reason won't stop them killing each other, Miller said.
You started these wars, Captain. Doesn't mean you can stop them. But you have to try.
And how am I supposed to do that?
Holden said. The distress in his voice could have been anger. It could have been prayer. Something in Miller's belly shifted, some inflamed organ calming enough to slip back into place. He hadn't been aware he'd felt wrong until he suddenly felt right again.
You ask yourself, what happens? Miller said. Ask yourself, what Naomi'd do?
Holden barked out a laugh. Is that how you make your decisions? Miller let his eyes close. Juliet Mao was there, sitting on the couch at her old apartment on Ceres, fighting the crew of the stealth ship to a standstill, burst open by the alien virus on the floor of her shower stall.
Something like it, Miller said.
The report from Ceres, a break from the usual competing press releases, came that night. The governing council of the OPA announced that a ring of Martian spies had been rooted out. The video feed showed the bodies floating out in industrial airlock in what looked like the old docks in Sector 6. At a distance, the victim seemed almost peaceful. The feed cut to the head of security. Captain Shadid looked older, harder. We regret the necessity of this action, she said to everyone everywhere. But in the cause of freedom, there can be no compromise.
That's what it's come to, Miller thought, rubbing a hand across his chin. Pogroms, after all. Cut off just 100 more heads, just 1,000 more heads, just 10,000 more heads, and then we'll be free.
A soft alert sounded, and a moment later, gravity shifted a few degrees to Miller's left. Course change. Holden had made a decision. He found the captain sitting alone and staring at a monitor in ops. The glow lit his face from below, casting shadows up into his eyes. The captain looked older, too.
You make the broadcast? Miller asked.
Nope. We're just one ship.
We tell everyone what this thing is and that we've got it, we'll be dead before Protogen.
Probably true, Miller said, sitting at an empty station with a grunt.
The gimbaled seat shifted silently.
We're going someplace.
I don't trust them with it, Holden said. I don't trust any of them with that safe.
Probably smart.
I'm going to Tycho Station. There's someone there I trust.
Trust?
Don't actively distrust.
Naomi think it's the right thing?
I don't know. I didn't ask her. But I think so.
Close enough, Miller said.
Holden looked up from the monitor for the first time.
You know the right thing?
Holden said.
Yeah.
What is it?
Throw that safe into a long collision course with the sun and find a way to make sure no one ever, ever goes to Eros or Phoebe again, Miller said. Pretend none of this ever happened.
So why aren't we doing that? Miller nodded slowly.
How do you throw away the Holy Grail?
Chapter 37 Holden. Alex had the Rosinante running at 3/4 of a G for 2 hours while the crew prepared and ate dinner. He would run it back up to 3 when the break was over, but in the meantime, Holden enjoyed standing on his own 2 legs at something not too far off from Earth gravity. It was a little heavy for Naomi and Miller, but neither of them complained. They both understood the need for haste. Once the gravity had dropped from the crush of high acceleration, the whole crew quietly gathered in the galley and started making dinner. Naomi blended together fake eggs and fake cheese. Amos cooked tomato paste and the last of their fresh mushrooms into a red sauce that actually smelled like the real thing. Alex, who had the duty watch, had forwarded ship ops down to a panel in the galley and sat at a table next to it, spreading the fake cheese paste and red sauce onto flat noodles, in hopes that the end result would approximate lasagna. Holden had oven duty, and had spent the lasagna prep time baking frozen lumps of dough into bread. The smell in the galley was not entirely unlike actual food. Miller had followed the crew into the galley, but seemed uncomfortable asking for something to do. Instead, he set the table, and then sat down at it and watched. He wasn't exactly avoiding Holden's eyes, but he wasn't going out of his way to catch his attention. By unspoken mutual agreement, no one had any of the news channels on. Holden was sure everyone would rush back to check the current state of the war as soon as dinner was over, but for now, they all worked in companionable silence. When the prep was done, Holden switched off bread duty and on to moving lasagna-filled cookware into and out of the oven. Naomi sat down next to Alex and began a quiet conversation with him about something she'd seen on the op screen. Holden split his time between watching her and watching the lasagna. She laughed at something Alex said, and unconsciously twisted one finger into her hair. Holden felt his belly tighten a notch. Out of the corner of his eye, he thought he saw Miller staring at him. When he looked, the detective had turned away, a hint of a smile on his face. Naomi laughed again. She had one hand on Alex's arm, and the pilot was blushing and talking as fast as his silly Martian drawl would let him. They looked like friends. That both made Holden happy and filled him with jealousy. He wondered if Naomi would ever be his friend again. She caught him looking and gave him a conspiratorial wink that probably would have made a lot of sense if he'd been able to hear what Alex was saying. He smiled and winked back, grateful just to be included in the moment. A sizzling sound from inside the oven called his attention back. The lasagna was beginning to bubble and run over the sides of the dishes. He pulled on his oven mitts and opened the door. "Soup's on," he said, pulling the first of the dishes and putting it on the table. "That's mighty ugly-looking soup," Amos said.
Yeah, Holden said, It's just something Mother Tamara used to say when she'd finished cooking. Not sure where it comes from.
One of your three mothers did the cooking. How traditional, Naomi said with a smirk.
Well, she split it pretty evenly with Caesar, one of my fathers.
Naomi smiled at him, a genuine smile now.
It sounds really nice, she said. Big family like that.
Yeah, it really was, he replied. A vision in his head of nuclear fire tearing apart the Montana farmhouse he'd grown up in, his family blowing into ash. If it happened, he was sure Miller would be there to let him know it was his fault. He wasn't sure he'd be able to argue anymore. As they ate, Holden felt a slow release of tension in the room. Amos belched loudly, then reacted to the chorus of protests by doing it again even more loudly. Alex retold the joke that had made Naomi laugh. Even Miller got into the mood and told a long and increasingly improbable story about hunting down a black market cheese operation that ended in a gunfight with 9 naked Australians in an illegal brothel. By the finish of the story, Naomi was laughing so hard she drooled on her shirt, and Amos kept repeating, "No fucking way," like a mantra. The story was amusing enough, and the detective's dry delivery suited it well, but Holden only half listened. He watched his crew, saw the tension falling from their faces and shoulders. He and Amos were both from Earth, though if he had to guess, he'd say Amos had forgotten about his home world the first time he'd shipped out. Alex was from Mars, and clearly still loved it. One bad mistake on either side, and both planets might be radioactive rubble by the end of dinner. But right now, they were just friends having a meal together. It was right. It was what Holden had to keep fighting for. "I actually remember that cheese shortage," Naomi said once Miller had stopped talking. "Belt-wide. That was your fault?"
"Yeah, well, if they'd only been sneaking cheese past the government auditors, we wouldn't have had a problem," Miller said. "But they had this habit of shooting the other cheese smugglers. Makes the cops notice. Bad business."
"Over fucking cheese?" Amos said, tossing his fork onto his plate with a clack. "Are you serious? I mean, drugs or gambling or something, but cheese?"
"Gambling's legal most places," Miller said, "and a chemistry class dropout can cook up just about any drug you like in his bathroom. No way to control supply."
"Real cheese comes from Earth or Mars," Naomi added, "and after they tack on shipping costs and the coalition's 50% in taxes, it costs more than fuel pellets.
We wound up with 130 kilos of Vermont cheddar in the evidence lockup," Miller said. "Street value, that would have probably bought someone their own ship. It had disappeared by the end of the day. We wrote it up as lost to spoilage. No one said a word as long as everyone went home with a brick."
The detective leaned back in his chair with a distant look on his face.
"My God, that was good cheese," he said with a smile.
"Yeah, well, this fake stuff does taste like shit," Amos said, then added in a hurry, "No offense, boss, you did a real good job whipping it up.
But that's still weird to me, fighting over cheese."
"It's why they killed Eros," Naomi said. Miller nodded but said nothing.
"How do you figure that?" Amos said.
"How long have you been flying?" Naomi asked.
"I don't know," Amos replied, his lips compressing as he did the mental math. 25 years, maybe?
"Fly with a lot of belters, right?"
"Yeah," Amos said. "Can't get better shipmates than belters. Except me, of course."
"You've flown with us for 25 years. You like us. You've learned the patois. I bet you can order a beer and a hooker on any station in the belt. Heck, if you were a little taller and a lot skinnier, you could pass for one of us by now." Amos smiled, taking it as a compliment. "But you still don't get us," Naomi said.
"Not really.
No one who grew up with free air ever will. And that's why they can kill 1.5 million of us to figure out what their bug really does."
"Hey now," Alex interjected. "You serious about that? You think the inners and outers see themselves as that different?"
Of course they do, Miller said. We're too tall, too skinny. Our heads look too big, and our joints too knobby.
Holden noticed Naomi glancing across the table at him, a speculative look on her face.
I like your head, Holden thought at her, but the radiation hadn't given him telepathy either, because her expression didn't change.
We've practically got our own language now, Miller said. Ever see an Earther try to get directions in the deep dig?
Turan spin pow schlag tu ea siman ido,
Naomi said with a heavy belter accent.
Go spinward to the tube station, which will take you back to the docks, Amos said. The fuck so hard about that?
I had a partner wouldn't have known that after 2 years on Ceres, Miller said. And Havelock wasn't stupid. He just wasn't from there.
Holden listened to them talk and pushed cold pasta around on his plate with a chunk of bread.
Okay, we get it, he said. You're weird. But to kill 1.5 million people over some skeletal differences and slang?
People have been getting tossed into ovens for less than that ever since they invented ovens, Miller said. If it makes you feel better, most of us think you're squat and microcephalic.
Alex shook his head.
Don't make a lick of sense to me turning that bug loose, even if you hated every single human on Eros personally. Who knows what that thing'll do?
Naomi walked to the galley sink and washed her hands, the running water drawing everyone's attention. I've been thinking about that, she said, then turned around, wiping her hands on a towel. The point of it, I mean.
Miller started to speak, but Holden hushed him with a quick gesture and waited for Naomi to continue.
So, she said, I've been thinking of it as a computing problem. If the virus, or nanomachine, or protomolecule, or whatever was designed, it has a purpose, right?
Definitely, Holden said.
And it seems like it's trying to do something, something complex. It doesn't make sense to go to all that trouble just to kill people. Those changes it makes look intentional, just not complete to me.
I can see that, Holden said.
Alex and Amos nodded along with him but stayed quiet. So maybe the issue is that the protomolecule isn't smart enough yet. You can compress a lot of data down pretty small, but unless it's a quantum computer, processing takes space. The easiest way to get that processing in tiny machines is through distribution. Maybe the protomolecule isn't finishing its job because it just isn't smart enough to. Yet.
Not enough of them, Alex said.
Right, Naomi said, dropping the towel into a bin under the sink. So, you give them a lot of biomass to work with and see what it is they are ultimately made to do.
According to that guy in the video, they were made to hijack life on Earth and wipe us out, Miller said.
And that, Holden said, is why Eros is perfect. Lots of biomass in a vacuum-sealed test tube. And if it gets out of hand, there's already a war going on. A lot of ships and missiles can be used for nuking Eros into glass if the threat seems real. Nothing to make us forget our differences like a new player butting in.
Wow, Amos said. That is really, really fucked up.
Okay, but even though that's probably what's happened, Holden said, I still can't believe that there are enough evil people all in one place to do it. This isn't a one-man operation. This is the work of dozens, maybe hundreds of very smart people. Does Protogen just go around recruiting every potential Stalin and Jack the Ripper it runs across?
I'll make sure to ask Mr. Dresden, Miller said, an unreadable expression on his face, when we finally meet.
Tycho's habitat ring spun serenely around the bloated zero-G factory globe in the center. The massive construction waldos that sprouted from the top were maneuvering an enormous piece of hull plating onto the side of the Nauvoo. Looking at the station on the op screens while Alex finished up docking procedures, Holden felt something like relief. So far, Tycho was the one place no one had tried to shoot them
or blow them up, or vomit goo on them, and that practically made it home. Holden looked at the research safe, clamped securely to the deck, and hoped that he hadn't just killed everyone on the station by bringing it there. As if on cue, Miller pulled himself through the deck hatch and drifted over to the safe. He gave Holden a meaningful look. "Don't say it. I'm already thinking it," Holden said. Miller shrugged and drifted over to the op station.
"Big," he said, nodding at the Nauvoo on Holden's screen.
"Generation ship," Holden said. "Something like that will give us the stars."
"Or a lonely death on a long trip to nowhere," Miller replied.
"You know," Holden said, "some species' version of the Great Galactic Adventure is shooting virus-filled bullets at their neighbors. I think ours is pretty damn noble in comparison." Miller seemed to consider that, nodded, and watched Tycho Station swell on the monitor as Alex brought them closer. The detective kept one hand on the console, making the micro-adjustments necessary to remain still, even as the pilot's maneuvers threw unexpected bursts of gravity at them from every direction. Holden was strapped into his chair. Even concentrating, he couldn't handle zero-G and intermittent thrust half that well. His brain just couldn't be trained out of the 20-odd years he'd spent with gravity as a constant. Naomi was right. It would be so easy to see Belters as alien. Hell, if you gave them time to develop some really efficient implantable oxygen storage and recycling and kept trimming the environment suits down to the minimum necessary for heat, you might wind up with Belters who spent more time outside their ships and stations than in. Maybe that was why they were taxed to subsistence level. The bird was out of the cage, but you couldn't let it stretch its wings too far or it might forget it belonged to you.
"You trust this, Fred?" Miller asked.
"Sort of," Holden said. "He treated us well last time when everyone else wanted us dead or locked up." Miller grunted as if that proved nothing.
"He's OPA, right?"
"Yeah," Holden said. "But I think maybe the real OPA. Not the cowboys who want to shoot it out with the inners. And not those nuts on the radio calling for war. Fred's a politician."
"What about the ones keeping Ceres in line?"
"I don't know," Holden said. "I don't know about them. But Fred's the best shot we have. Least wrong."
"Fair enough," Miller said.
"We won't find a political solution to Protogen, you know."
"Yeah,"
Holden said, then began unbuckling his harness as the Rosie slid into its berth with a series of metallic bangs. "But Fred isn't just a politician." Fred sat behind his large wooden desk, reading the notes Holden had written about Eros, the search for Julie, and the discovery of the stealth ship. Miller sat across from him, watching Fred like an entomologist might watch a new species of bug, guessing if it was likely to sting. Holden was a little farther away on Fred's right, trying not to keep looking at the clock on his hand terminal. On the huge screen behind the desk, the Nauvoo drifted by like the metal bones of some dead and decaying leviathan. Holden could see the tiny spots of brilliant blue light where workers used welding torches on the hull and frame. To occupy himself, he started counting them. He'd reached 43 when a small shuttle appeared in his field of view, a load of steel beams clutched in a pair of heavy manipulator arms, and flew toward the half-built generation ship. The shuttle shrank to a point no larger than the tip of a pen before it stopped. The Nauvoo suddenly shifted in Holden's mind from a large ship relatively nearby to a gigantic ship farther away. It gave him a short rush of vertigo. His hand terminal beeped at almost the same instant that Miller's did. He didn't even look at it. He just tapped the face to shut it up. He knew this routine by now. He pulled out a small bottle, took out two blue pills, and swallowed them dry. He could hear Miller pouring pills out of his bottle as well.
The ship's expert medical system dispensed them for him every week with a warning that failing to take them on schedule would lead to horrific death. He took them. He would for the rest of his life. Missing a few would just mean that wasn't very long. Fred finished reading and threw his hand terminal down on the desk, then rubbed his eyes with the heels of his hands for several seconds. To Holden, he looked older than the last time they'd seen each other.
"I have to tell you, Jim, I have no idea what to make of this," he finally said.
Miller looked at Holden and mouthed "Jim" at him with a question on his face. Holden ignored him.
"Did you read Naomi's edition at the end?"
Holden asked.
"The bit with the network nanobugs for increased processing power?"
"Yeah, that bit," Holden said. "It makes sense, Fred." Fred laughed without humor, then stabbed one finger at his terminal.
"That," he said, "that only makes sense to a psychopath. No one sane could do that, no matter what they thought they might get out of it."
Miller cleared his throat.
"You have something to add, Mr. Miller?" Fred asked.
"Miller," the detective replied.
"Yes. First, and all respect here, don't kid yourself. Genocide's old school. Second, the facts aren't in question. Protogen infected Eero Station with a lethal alien disease, and they're recording the results. Why doesn't matter. We need to stop them."
"And," Holden said, "we think we can track down where their observation station is." Fred leaned back in his chair, the fake leather and metal frame creaking under his weight, even in the 1/3 G.
"Stop them how?" he asked.
Fred knew. He just wanted to hear them say it out loud. Miller played along.
"I'd say we fly to their station and shoot them."
"Who is we?" Fred asked.
"There are a lot of OPA hotheads looking to shoot it out with Earth and Mars," Holden said.
"We give them some real bad guys to shoot at instead."
Fred nodded in a way that didn't mean he agreed to anything.
"And your sample? The captain's safe?" Fred said.
"That's mine," Holden said. "No negotiation on that."
Fred laughed again, though there was some humor in it this time. Miller blinked in surprise and then stifled a grin.
"Why would I agree to that?" Fred asked.
Holden lifted his chin and smiled.
"What if I told you that I've hidden the safe on a planetesimal, booby-trapped with enough plutonium to break anyone who touches it into their component atoms even if they could find it?" he said.
Fred stared at him for a moment, then said,
"But you didn't."
"Well, no," Holden said, "but I could tell you I did."
"You are too honest," Fred said, "and you can't trust anyone with something this big. You already know what I'm going to do with it. That's why, until we can agree on something better, you're leaving it with me."
Fred nodded.
"Yes," he said. "I guess I am."